This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Cedarside. Cedarside's original 100% organic insect spray kills bed bugs, mosquitoes, fleas, ticks, mites, scorpions, roaches, and more, but is completely safe for your home, pets, and family. Go to cedarside.com, use coupon code Hoffman at checkout for free shipping, or call 800-842-1464 and mention you heard it here. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's subject is an important one. We haven't covered it in ages because, well, it's part of the daily routine for tens of millions of Americans. The problem is headaches. We're going to talk to an expert. He's Dr. Corey Schuler. He has a variety of degrees to his credit. He's got a master's in science. He's also has a chiropractic degree. He's a certified nutrition specialist, and he's an advocate for integrative medicine. And he is adjunct assistant professor at the School of Applied Clinical Nutrition at New York Chiropractic College. However, he practices in western Wisconsin near the Twin Cities at Hudson Headache Clinic. One of the few clinics in the country that is dedicated to an integrative approach to headaches. There are plenty of headache clinics at major hospitals across the country. They're run by neurologists, and they often use powerful medications to treat headaches. But that's not what Dr. Schuler is about. He is about natural alternatives to often addicting and debilitating medications. And he's a good colleague of mine, so I thought we'd introduce our Intelligent Medicine audience to his approach. Dr. Schuler, it's a pleasure having you here on the program.
Thanks for having me, Dr. Hoffman. I appreciate it.
So, so tell us a little bit about how you got into this, because from my previous conversations with you, you didn't always focus on headaches. You were sort of a general practitioner of integrative medicine, but it seemed that over the years you've acquired a specialty in working with headaches.
Yeah, it's sort of a natural progression. I was working a lot in women's hormone issues, and those kind of progressed into things like fibromyalgia and sort of different encephalitis type issues and chronic fatigue, and that got to be really a difficult type of practice to manage, and that sort of transitioned away from that into more of a kind of a stress management practice, like what can we do to bolster our life against the effects of modern stress. And then I looked back one day and I said, you know what really is happening is one of the manifestations from all of the different groups is chronic debilitating headaches. People who are having headaches and they're there, but they're not really there. They're at work, but they're not really working. Sometimes people miss work. Like, it's something that I gained expertise in just by getting my hands dirty.
So a headache is not a headache is not a headache. It's, we say headache, but they break down into various subclassifications, possibly with different ways of treating. So help us out with the breakdown.
Sure. There's different medical classifications, like things like cluster headache, which people have maybe heard of, and we also hear about other kinds of headaches, but the common headaches that we see in day-to-day practice or day-to-day life are going to be either migraine or tension headache. And yeah, I'm a chiropractor, so my bias is that it's a cervicogenic headache when mm-hmm. tension headache, or at least that's one of the contributions to it.
So for a fancy word for it, it's generated by some sort of imbalance in the neck musculature in the vertebrae.
Yeah, headache that comes from the neck is exactly it. And so you have those palpable, trigger points or tension spots across the top of the shoulders. There's a good possibility that there's at least a contribution from the neck.
Okay. So is there a major difference in how you'd approach? Say someone has just blinding migraines. They're classic. They occur in one, migraine comes from the French hemicrane, half the head. They occur on one side, associated with nausea, vomiting. Sometimes there's an aura. So there's a classic migraine versus someone who says, gee, every day I wake up with a dull headache and then it's on, it gets worse, it gets better. But I always feel like there's pressure on my head. Is there a distinct difference to how you might approach those two?
We usually try to peel these headaches apart. It's very uncommon, at least in our practice now, to find that somebody has a certain type of headache.
Okay.
So the classic migraine you just described, the photophobia, or the, you know, bright lights hurt, loud sounds bother you, the vomiting or nauseousness, those things. Occasionally, those are just an easy trick. Well, if it's an easy trick, usually one of the common medications, like even like a beta blocker or a tricyclic antidepressant, will be able to be kind of take care of that. And if that takes care of it, then they don't need me because they took care of it.
Okay, so you're not inalterably opposed to the use of medication. The medication works, but all too often, and you know, I know this from my practice, people come in and they say, I've tried everything under the sun, and it sort of helps to take the edge off it, but I still get these things.
Yeah, that's exactly our approach, that if medication works, and maybe that's not a bad idea to at least have it on hand, or but we usually see the people that have tried multiple things and nothing's worked, or stuff has stopped working. That happens occasionally with headaches too, especially with a lot of the pain medications, the analgesics. Mm-hmm. You'll have ibuprofen or even naproxen, where you get sort of a rebound type headache from taking it for too long.
And, of course, then there are the negative consequences of taking some of these medications. You know, some people might blissfully take, a couple of Advils every day for, you know, month in, month out, and then wind up in the ER with a bleeding ulcer.
Yeah, that's definitely something we would like to avoid. And from personal experience, not personal experience, but I remember growing up, and my father had debilitating headaches. And I knew when he had a headache because I could see it in his eyes. But then I knew when he really had a headache, because he had to just lay down and, you know, take the rest of the day off. And he was a farmer. You can't really take the day off when you have to,
right,
you know, when you have to plant or whatever. And
you're working for yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of individuals now are really, it kind of, headaches set up relationships. Like, they remember their mother or their father or their son or their daughter being in that situation where they're just sort of checked out, all to this, you know, common condition. So that's kind of important for me.
Well, so break it down for us. Let's start with the typical, what would seem like a tension headache. People who say, say I'm a patient, I come in and I say, look, I just have a dull headache, and, you know, some of it's worse in the morning, and then I kind of get through the day, but then sometimes it just impinges on me, and, you know, both sides of it, you know, it wraps around my temples, both sides of my forehead. That doesn't sound like a migraine, more like towards a tension headache. What approach might you take in working up that patient?
Sure, yeah. Tension headaches we think of as like a crawling headache rather than migraine, which is more like a lightning kind of headache. And so these crawling headaches, they usually do get worse throughout the day. And what I remind people and just educate people on is that as we go through the day, you navigate through the world, these muscles get tired. And so the little muscles that sit right below the skull, these suboccipital muscles that kind of create a band right kind of behind the ears, that's one spot where that muscle endurance can be an issue. And then also right at the top of the shoulders, right at the base of the neck, really kind of between where the neck and the upper back meet. It's hard to do this without a diagram. I need to point that.
Right.
Those are two places where that can happen. And I will share that I think most of it comes from sitting. You know, a lot of us have sitting occupations, and the more people sit, and maybe not in the best posture, and they kind of stay in one position for a long, long time, they're looking at screens a lot, mm-hmm. and eye strain. So eye strain can be a single contributor.
Add to that the tiny screens that we now look at, because a lot of people are bent into all kinds of contortions looking at their small mobile devices.
Absolutely. I would have you take a selfie of yourself trying to look at your own screen. You look like you're in the fetal position most of the time. So
now I have an Apple Watch, so it's an even tinier screen.
I think we're going the other way. We're getting bigger and bigger with tablets, and then all of a sudden we got smaller again. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, it's just a jazz up sales, I guess. So
that's a tension headache, and I guess those are usually fairly easily diagnosable. You asked how I would work it up. If manual therapy, spinal manipulation, massage, if touching it helps, then it's probably a tension headache. easy to understand. And so we see people who have been to other chiropractors or other physical therapists or massage therapists, and they'll say, yeah, I get relief from that kind of stuff, but it usually only lasts 20 or 30 minutes. And so that's a big clue for us. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. That's helpful. We're on the right track, but we need to really figure this out.
So what you're saying is that virtually any chiropractor or body worker worth their salt can palpate or identify a pressure point which might provide relief. But it might take someone like you who specializes in working with headaches to discern a more permanent solution. Am I getting that correct?
Yeah, I want to reduce the intensity, frequency, and duration of headaches. So, you know, headaches can last 4 days or 4 hours to 3 days. If I can reduce that duration, that's helpful. If I can reduce it down from a 9 out of 10 pain down to a 6 out of 10 pain, that's a win. And if we can reduce it from every day or every other day down to once every 2 weeks, that's a win. So I'm looking at where can we win here. If you think about it, the cause is eye strain and, you know, poor posture and sitting too much. Well, the treatment really has to be fixing that. And so unless a chiropractor or massage therapist is going to follow that person around every day, all day, and work on them once or twice a day, those are limited solutions. We really need to educate individuals on how to correct those things that are causing the problem.
Do you do sort of an ergonomic analysis of their day-to-day tasks?
Absolutely. We will on occasion get called to people's offices and do ergonomic reviews and say, well, you're at a standing desk, but you're standing at it wrong. You're at a seated desk. You need to be at a standing desk. There's definitely those sorts of things, but we do kind of what's called a headache camp, where okay. we go through all the likely processes that are going wrong, and so a lot of people can self-identify their problems. When I say, when you look down at your computer, if your computer's not at eye level and you're always looking down at it, you're likely a candidate for headache problems. So take a look at your own work environment and see where it's at. Occasionally, though, people can't see for themselves where the problem is, and we'll get called into that.
I'm just looking at my computer now, and I just moved it because it actually wasn't causing me headaches, but moving my computer made such a profound difference in some back tension that I was having. Because sure. I had positioned it conveniently. I realized that all the computers in my life are to my right at about a 45-degree angle, and I was twisting around to, you know, now it's like dead center, right at eye level, and it's already made a difference. And on the advice of a chiropractor. So that's part of it. So what are some of the other elements you might have? I mean, surely there are other lifestyle factors, I mean, diet, caffeine, you know, et cetera, that you will take into account in evaluating the nature of a person's headache.
Sure. So we'll keep after the manual therapy kind of stuff. One thing that I recommend everybody do is to use like one of those training bands, like a TheraBand, like by name, I guess. Those stretchy rubber bands that offer resistance. If you can kind of stretch that in front of your chest, what that does is that actually activates some of those postural muscles between your shoulder blades and can take some of the tension off that neck. It'll actually help you improve your posture without kind of that old, you know, having somebody's mother whisper in their ear, stand up straight, son. Reactivating those muscles can be really helpful, and that's one exercise that we give, I would say, 8 out of 10 patients that come into the office.
If I get this right, I mean, it's hard to explain this in an audio fashion, but it's sort of like you use the bands to pull outward, and in effect your shoulder blades contract towards one another. You're actually pulling your shoulder blades back a little bit when you pull this out. Is that correct?
Correct. So I actually put my index finger on their spine, mm-hmm. and say, I want you to take your shoulder blades, and I want you to squish my big fat finger.
So make it concave more.
Exactly.
Instead of rounded out, convex.
Perfect. That's a perfect description. You can't do that by arching your back. You can't do it by, you know, by bending forward. The only way you can do that is literally by taking those scapula and retracting them back, and mm-hmm. that rubber band offers the resistance for that.
I guess in the gym, an equivalent exercise might be a seated row where you're actually pulling back, you know, and that's another way you can engage those muscles and strengthen them, perhaps. It's just a question of, you know, then you leave the gym and you forget about it and you hunch over like you used to. So that's the problem.
Those types of exercises are based on frequency. You really want to do an increased frequency. So I recommend at least 5 times a day when you're in the early stages. So I say every time you go to the bathroom, make sure you pull out your little rubber band and you do the exercise for a few seconds, activate those muscles, and then you can go ahead and get back to work for a while.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you ask patients about diet, about blood sugar? I mean, in working with some patients with headaches, we discover they might have a headache when they have a blood sugar crash. They're, you know, binging out on sweets.
Absolutely. We do a pretty significant dietary history, and not just dietary history, but just a regular medical history to look for other things. Migraine headaches are notorious for being caused by, as I mentioned, emotional stress. I mentioned sort of offhandedly hormones, but also missed meals are a big problem. Sleep disturbances are a big problem. There's an ever-growing list of trigger foods that can cause migraine headaches. Alcohol, despite your opinion of it, good or bad, can be problematic. And then also, most people are aware of the bright lights or noises. So we try to look at all of those aspects. And like I said, usually one's not the cause, but usually we have 2 or 3 contributors to people's headaches.
Hey, what are some typical migraine trigger foods?
Sure. Things like, it used to be, the big one was always chocolate. And chocolate and caffeine were always the bad guys. But sometimes we find out that tomatoes and other nightshade-type vegetables are problematic, which is always one that I get upset about because it's vegetables, right? However, it can be a problem. Tomatoes are usually the biggest culprit for that. So we hear about people having really bad headaches and they find that, oh yeah, I just had some like really great tomato paste or this Italian restaurant or whatever. On the growing list, I find that dairy tends to be a problem for people. Gluten can be a problem for more people, and corn and soy are also problems. I see less soy problems than I think I used to, and maybe that's my attention to it, or it just is the reality of it, but corn seems to be playing higher on that list more and more.
Do you believe in the efficacy of allergy tests to detect this, or do you simply put patients on an elimination diet and reintroduce foods, trial and error?
Yeah, I would love to be able to rely on food sensitivity testing, but I haven't found them to be all that worthwhile. I mean, they're worthwhile. They just, you have to interpret them. You can't just say, oh, this is the good list and the bad list. It's not that easy. There's some interpretation that has to happen.
I would agree. What about MSG and weasel words for MSG? Because a lot of, you know, there are a lot of, I don't think I find any foods that contain MSG anymore, but there are a lot of weasel words for MSG.
Yeah, the food industry has gotten away from using monosodium glutamate or MSG or any kind of easily identified derivative of that term. The best way to avoid those foods is really to avoid the restaurants that serve off the truck. If that makes sense, the highly processed foods that are typically microwaved and served to you in a restaurant-style situation, those have a lot of different preservatives that can either mimic MSG or do contain a differently labeled MSG, and then also the frozen food section. So foods that are microwaved tend to have those, and that drives that glutamate system, and glutamate in excess in the brain is not a good deal for those blood vessels.
It's a neuroexcitatory compound. We learned this from Dr. Russell Blaylock, who he actually invented the term neuroexcitatory compounds. There are certain foods that do that, and things like aspartame in diet soda. Do you find ever that some of your patients get better when they stop guzzling diet soda?
I do. So most of the people that we've seen have done a version of the diet that we're about to give to them. So
right.
We get the eye roll. And say,
so they're already pretty sophisticated.
Yeah, but we usually take it a step further. So a lot of them they're taking a diet approach that's similar to what I would see in maybe the late 1980s bodybuilding scene, where it's low carbohydrate, high protein, but as long as it's zero calorie, it's good for you.
Yeah.
So a lot of these, ACE-K and sucralose and aspartame. To be honest, I don't see as much problem with sucralose. I know there's studies that would go against what I just said there. But as far as headache pain, I haven't found sucralose to be as bad of a problem, but aspartame is absolutely on the high end. In fact, I would go, there's a dietary supplement called lithium aspartate, and there's lithium orotate, not the drug, the supplement. Mm-hmm. And I actually moved away from the lithium aspartate entirely, just
okay.
to the orotate, because anything that's aspartic acid oriented can be bad for headaches.
Actually, they used to market an energy supplement called, I think it was magnesium potassium aspartate, or potassium magnesium aspartate, because it's supposed to be a super energy supplement, but I guess that might come under the heading of a neuroexcitatory.
Possibly, yes.
Yeah. So, all right, we're in just a few moments, we're going to talk a little bit about supplements and their relationship to headaches. Can they help to ameliorate headaches? Is that part of a program? But talk to us about the stress connection first. What's going on the stress front, and how can patients begin to alleviate stress that prompts headaches?
Sure. Well, a lot of people don't. They kind of know that headaches and stress are related somehow, but they don't have a good practice in which to mediate the effects of modern stress, and that stress is not going away. So I think we need a more robust, aggressive approach to kind of relieve stress. We can't just relax. There's no such thing as just relax anymore. We have to forcibly apply ourselves to be able to take...
We have to work at relaxing.
You have to work really, really hard to chill out. My son would say chillax.
Chillax, right.
But yeah, that's a major problem, and what we're seeing is that meditating once a day may not be enough. You might have to do it two or three times a day. You might have to get deeper into your meditative practice. Maybe yoga once a week just isn't going to cut it. You're going to have to be harder and more aggressive about it. So interestingly enough, sometimes we aggressively approach relaxation too hard, and it causes its own stress. So I also bolster this with, let's take ourselves easy. We're only human. We can only do so much. So maybe we should just get some help and support along the way.
Is exercise part of a program to alleviate headaches in some cases?
To some degree, I actually find the best exercise, at least for beginners in their headache program, is long walks. The long mm-hmm. walks are going to be the best thing I can have for you. Now, that's not the only exercise that I'm recommending, but sometimes heavy lifting and sometimes intermittent training and other things like that will actually cause a headache, causes some vasoconstriction, and can be a problem. So we have to just be careful and monitor everybody, and we exercise tolerance.
All right. Okay, this is a good point at which to pause, because we've covered a lot of ground in our discussion of headaches with Dr. Corey Schuler. Dr. Schuler has his own clinic in Wisconsin. Please give us the information one more time for our listeners.
Yeah, the website is hudsonheadache.com.
hudsonheadache.com. And we'll rejoin Dr. Schuler in just a moment if you'll click on part two of today's podcast on the subject of headaches. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.